Hey everyone, well, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. I'm your host, Peter Reitzis, and I'd like to welcome back to the show, Dr. Robert Quiesel. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I am great. It's so good to talk with you. It's great that we're starting off 2014 with a Bob Quiesel episode. Well, as remains to be seen.
Right, exactly. jury is out on that one. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, as long as this is publishable, it will be episode 441 for February 11th, 2014, and I'm sure it will be publishable. The topic is I stutter. What should I do? We're doing a series on this topic at Stutter Talk. The B team, the wonderful, awesome B team, just covered this topic on episode 438. I've heard the show. Bob has not had a chance yet to hear the show, but I wouldn't be surprised if Bob brings up a lot of the same points that Karen, Joel, and Roisin did. Because really, I mean, how many ingredients are there to make chocolate, Bob?
Yeah, that's true.
Again, as remains to be seen. Dr. Robert, the expert Quiesel, is a professor. I'm sorry to embarrass you. Is a professor of communication sciences and disorders at Western Illinois University. A person who stutters, a board-recognized specialist in fluency disorders, and a fellow of the American Speech Language Hearing Association. Board-recognized specialist. That title is slightly changed now, yes, right?
It's now board certified. It isn't board certified. We talked about this on the last.
That's true.
Show.
Well, you know what? Bob knows stuttering. How about?
I think it is board certified. I'm now a BCSF. So okay. I guess it is board certified. I guess that is correct.
All right. So we're about to jump into this big topic. Let me just remind the listeners there are different ways to support Stutter Talk besides making a donation. So you can support Stutter Talk by reviewing us on iTunes. Leaving a review on iTunes helps other people find the podcast. And we get so many hits from Facebook. So somebody posts a link to Stutter Talk on their Facebook wall, and we get so many hits from that. So please, if you like Stutter Talk, take a moment to choose your favorite episode or just stuttertalk.com and post it on your Facebook wall to bring more people to this show. So Bob, I'm sure you've gotten this question many times. Recently at Stutter Talk, I've received personally and through Stutter Talk a bunch of emails and Facebook messages from people in India asking the question, I stammer, what should I do? And of course, we get that question a lot from people who say, I stutter, what should I do? And we can't really answer that question. We can't tell other people what they should do. But what I find helpful is to hear people's stories. So why don't we talk today about what we have done to face our stuttering? And I'm going to give you first shot at this, Bob. So you stutter. What did you do?
Well, I think, you know, for me, and again, this is going back many, many, in fact, I've been using the phrase many, many years a lot the last few years, because much of what I have to share goes back many, many years.
So you were not surfing the internet looking for the word stuttering then?
No, exactly right. As I say to my students, I used to carry my stone tablets to class, and I would chisel my notes into my stone tablets when I was notes.
But okay.
So you know, I was one of those people who, when I was young, thought that the solution to my problem was going to be to stop stuttering, and I think that I had this hope that, you know, I was going to wake up one morning and I was just going to, you know, not stutter. And I'm not quite sure exactly, you know, how that was going to happen. You know, it's just this thing, because I had been told by my doctor that, you know, don't worry about it. It's going to go away. And so for most of my childhood into adolescence, I had this hope that my stuttering was going to just go away, and so you know, you live your life and you stutter and you try to do things that really aren't all that helpful. And you go to speech therapy, and the focus in speech therapy is your speech fluency. And that went on until I was probably 20 years old or so, 20 or 21. And I didn't have a particular, and again, this is a story that many people have heard, so many people are probably tuning out of the show at this point. But anyway,
Nodding along, yeah. Well, it's nice to hear your experience right. reflected yeah. in someone else. So yeah.
And so when I was around, I guess at the end of my sophomore year of college, I quit school, and you know I didn't have a very good experience in my first years of college, because I was trying to hide my stuttering, and I didn't interact with people, I didn't talk to people, and I just found my stuttering to be very, very frustrating. So I quit school. I went to work in a factory, and then when I learned what it was like to actually work for a living, I then quit that job, and I went to move to Dallas and lived with a friend who was going to school in Dallas. And I spent that spring semester just sort of pondering my future. What was I going to do? And I realized the thing that was holding me back was the fact that I stuttered. And so I decided it was time to, you know, get back into therapy. And I thought about going to therapy at Indiana University, where I went to college, but I didn't bother to do it. I tried to find the clinic one day and I couldn't find it, and I didn't bother to ask anybody. And so I never followed up on that. But then I went back, from Dallas, at the end of that spring semester. I got a hold of a friend who knew one of the professors at IU, and what transpired was that I got into the CSD major at that time was called hearing and speech or speech and hearing sciences at Indiana, and I got into what I called my good therapy. And what happened in my good therapy was that I was asked to sort of ponder, well, what exactly is going on with your speech and things like that. And I realized that it wasn't my speech per se that was the problem. It was how I was reacting to my speech. It was how I was dealing with things.
So, Bob, it sounds like you're saying that when you sort of met this speech therapist at the right time, so you were ready to make changes and your therapist was on board with this idea of let's face the stuttering head on, let's not chase fluency, let's not chase avoidance. Is that about right?
I think it was more like I was ready for change, and somebody told me that the change I needed to make was not changing my speech per se, but changing the way that I approached talking. And I mean, certainly we worked on speech. In fact, one of the things that I always mention to people who say that when you're working on attitudes and things like that, that you're giving up on speech fluency. And I say that's crazy. You know, obviously we worked on speech fluency, but what I came to realize was that there were many things I was doing because I was afraid of stuttering, and I was afraid that I might stutter, that were interfering with my ability to talk. And so once I learned that there were things that I could do, there were risks that I could take, that I probably wasn't going to be a fluent speaker, but that didn't mean that I couldn't be a person who was able to talk to other people and couldn't do the things I wanted to do as a speaker. That change in my frame of reference was the most critical thing that happened in terms of my ability to move forward and to go ahead and live a successful life, basically.
Well, you've been on Stutter Talk many times, well over a dozen times. Is it okay for me to say that you noticeably stutter, but you don't noticeably stutter that much? Is that a fair way to say it?
Oh yeah, right. Sure. Yeah.
So I have to ask you, Is your story the story where when you stopped chasing fluency so hard, you became more fluent, or you stuttered less? Is that a fair way to say it?
I'm not sure if I stuttered less. I stuttered in a different way when I stopped chasing fluency. I think that probably I was the person who, if you had known me before I went to my good therapy, I'd be the person who either wouldn't talk, or I'd be like, you know, I'd be the one who would like, and so I would use many, many words. I would come out fluently, but I wouldn't really say very much. And I still think to some extent, I probably still talk that way. I think I still probably put a lot of junk in my speech that doesn't need to be there. But basically, I came to realize that I didn't need to run from words. I didn't need to run from feared words. In fact, one of the most eye-opening experiences I had in therapy was when I said to the supervisor at IU, because again, when I was in therapy, I had college students who were working with me under the supervision of one of the faculty members at Indiana. And so there was one day that I was in therapy and I was, you know, talking and blah, blah. I don't remember what I was saying, but basically she came in the room and I said, I'm going to stutter on a word. She says, how do you know you're going to stutter? And it's like, well, I just know. It's like, how do you know? And then you come to realize that, well, if you think you're going to stutter on a word, but you don't give yourself the opportunity to try and say the word, and you say, well, I failed because I was going to stutter on that word, and therefore that was a failure. And it's like, well, you haven't failed to speak. You failed to give yourself a chance to speak. And what I then came to realize is that many words that I thought I might stutter on, I either didn't stutter on, or I could find ways to manage those words and say them in ways that, yes, they might have been disfluent, but they weren't horribly disfluent. I was still able to say the things that I wanted to say. And once I realized that, you know, you if you're running from stuttered words, if you're running from speaking situations, those sorts of things, and you're saying I failed, well, all you failed to do is you failed to give yourself an opportunity. You failed to try. You haven't. Your stuttering isn't what's failed, or your speech hasn't been what's failed. It's you've failed to try to do something. And again, maybe, you know, maybe because I was, my stuttering wasn't that severe, maybe it didn't take as much effort for me to learn to ways to manage my speech. But I realized that for so much of my adolescent years and into my young adulthood, I was just running from my stuttering. I wasn't really doing anything about trying to do anything different. I was simply running from stuttering, running from words, you know, running from speaking situations. And once I realized that there were things that I could actually do to try to confront stuttering and then try to learn ways to manage it, that was a real turning point for me, certainly.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter Reitzes here with Dr. Bob Kweisel. Wow, Bob, so much good stuff on the table. I already know that quote you just said, I didn't need to run from words, will be featured in a Stutter Talk newsletter. It's a good title for a show, but I really wanted to title the show I Stutter, What Should I Do? So I'll have to debate that in my own head here. And one of the things I love about that quote is when I saw, I had a great opportunity to see the premiere of the King's Speech. So I got to see it before everybody knew how great it was. So I had to decide, is this a great movie on my own or is this not, you know? And so there was a line in the movie where Lionel Logue, the speech therapist, says to King George, you don't have to, I'm trying to remember exactly what it is about you. You don't have to respond like you're 5 years old. Uh-huh. You don't have to be scared of the things that you were scared of when you were five. So when you say something like, I didn't need to run from my words, it's like, well, one of the things I learned in speech therapy was I had been responding and reacting to my stuttering the same way since I was a child, which was trying not to do it. I assume that you learned to run from your words at a very young age.
Oh yeah, sure. Right. Exactly. And again, it's one of those things where you don't really realize that's what you're learning to do to manage stuttering. It's just the thing that you start doing. You say, well, gee, I realize that if I word switch here, that I'm that I don't stutter, and so therefore let me start word switching. Some of the things that we do as people who stutter are things that we don't do in a conscious way. You know, you don't sit there and say, I'm going to make a concerted effort to word switch, but you have this weird behavior. It varies. You know, it comes and goes, and so you're trying to figure out what can I do to make this thing not happen, you know? And so you've come up with all these real sort of strange and bizarre things. And I think that's what therapy helped me with, was making sense out of stuff, you know, like somebody I could talk to, and they would be able to say, well, you know, maybe this is why that thing happens, or let's talk about why that thing happens. And you could sort of, you know, say, well, yeah, this is what happens, or this is what I experienced. And they'd say, well, how about this? And then you go, oh, I'd never thought about things in that way, or I'd never thought about trying this or trying that. And so it's really more, and that's why I talk about therapy as a problem-solving exercise, at least with older clients. You know, they didn't know what I'd experienced. They didn't know what I'd gone through, but they let me, you know, talk about what I'd gone through and try different things. And as a result of that, I learned new ways to manage my speech and do things differently.
Now, Sam, I'm glad you haven't heard the B team's take on this topic, because a lot of the things you're saying, they said in their own way, but they also stressed, I think they agreed that perhaps the most important thing to all of them was meeting other people who stutter. And you haven't said that yet, or I don't know if you're going to. So let me ask you, how important was that for you to meet other people who stutter?
Well, it was actually in probably two different ways. It was probably very, very important. One was, I didn't know a lot of kids who stuttered when I was growing up. I don't know why that was. I didn't go to small schools or wasn't in, you know, in small classes, but I probably only knew a couple of kids who stuttered when I was growing up. But then when I was in junior high school, I was in speech therapy, and I was asked one day, there was this fella at IU, he was a doctoral student, he was doing research and wanted some people to take part in his research, would I be willing to do it? And I met this guy, and he came over to my house to pick me up and take me over to the clinic to do this research. I'm thinking now probably there'd probably be some law about some college age male picking up another male to take him to the university clinic and do research. But anyway,
I have to ask you, is this Dean Williams?
No. This is at Indiana University. Williams was at Iowa. That was later. But this was at IU. This was just a doctoral student. And anyway, he came and got me, and he really stuttered. I mean, he stuttered big time, and he stuttered, and he managed his stuttering in a very forward, you know, very open way. You know, so he stuttered a lot, and I thought, oh my God, you know, this is what I'm, and he was an adult. And I thought, oh my gosh, I thought I was supposed to outgrow this thing. And here's a guy who's an adult and he's stuttering. I think that was the moment where I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not going to outgrow this thing. You know, I'm pretty much doomed to stutter for the rest of my life. And that was very sort of scary to me, because it was like, up to that point, I was living this sort of life of like, I'm going to wake up some morning and I'm going to be fluent. And I met this guy and I was like, maybe I'm not. Maybe my thinking about my future has been a little bit flawed. And so that really was good and bad. It was bad at the time, in the sense that it sort of shook me up, but it was good long term, because that's where I started to realize that, you know, I've got to do something about this besides just waiting for something to happen without me doing anything. But then when I got into therapy, one of the good experiences I had was that we used to have groups at IU. We'd get together probably three or four or five other folks in the clinic at Indiana who stuttered, and we would get together, and you'd see there are different degrees of stuttering, different ways of managing stuttering, but also different experiences with stuttering as well. And we would talk to each other, and we would help to support each other in our efforts. We were at varying stages of the process, and so that those group experiences were very, very good. And then, of course, as I got older, and as the technology changed, and as I met more and more people, you know, via the internet. Of course, this was I was certainly an adult by this time. But as you meet more and more people, et cetera. And I should also mention one other thing that was very, very critical for me was I got a copy of the book that was called To the Stutterer at that time. It's now called Advice to Those Who Stutter, because we can't use the word stutterer because it's a bad word. But anyway, but at that time, I think it was in Reader's Digest, there was an ad from the Stuttering Foundation. They were either giving away that book or they were selling it very, very cheaply. So I sent away for a copy of that and I got it. And that was very, very eye-opening. You know, 24 people who stuttered who had very, very similar experiences to what I'd had, and they gave advice and they offered insights. And it was like, hey, I'm not the only person who's going through this. And the things I'm doing are not strange. Other people do the same things. And that was like meeting other people who stuttered as well. And that was probably that, I think, was the thing that made me decide to go into this major and change my major to speech and hearing sciences. So that was like meeting people who stuttered. And yes, that was very, very critical to have a chance to meet other folks in that way.
And now, of course, you have a chapter in Advice to Those Who Stutter.
Yes, yes. And, which, again, when I was asked to do that, that was a real honor for me because closing the circle, if you will, you know, because that book had such an impact on me, and to be asked then to write a chapter was such an honor for me.
Yeah, well, you have a chapter in the second edition, and when they put out a third edition, Stuttering Foundation, I know one Stutter Talk host who would like a shot at the big leagues. but as you didn't hear it, but as the B team referred to the self-therapy for the stutterer book by the Stuttering Foundation as gold. And I agree with that, but I think Advice to Those Who Stutter is even more gold. It's just one of those books that just spoke to me deeply. It just read at, you know, just about every page was, oh yes, that makes sense to me. Yes, I should do that. Yes, yeah. I should face those fears. And that's
well, and to also put in a plug for you, you have a book that you've published, Stutter Talk has published, that also has many, many excellent chapters in it as well that people should read to get really good insights. Again, it's not quite like meeting people who stutter in terms of all chapters, but it certainly is a book that people can read to get really, really good insights. And Ken St. Louis has also published a book as well of those sorts of things. And so there are things out there that can be very, very helpful for people to get to kind of meet people who stutter if they really don't have physical access to somebody else who stutters.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we started Stutter Talk was that people were not stuttering on the radio. I mean, in the last 7 years since Stutter Talk began, you have more audio. You go to iTunes and you can find people stuttering. But when we started Stutter Talk, we were the only people stuttering on the internet. Like, you could hear, you know, this was before YouTube or before YouTube was big. And yeah. One of our goals was to do this podcast about stuttering and to stutter openly, voluntarily, and to talk about it openly. And in just the 7 years since Stutter Talk began, there's a lot more places on the internet where you can hear people stuttering. But for me, you know, meeting other people and hearing others stutter was really, really hard, but so important to know, I'm not the only one who does that.
Right, right, yeah. And also seeing that there are many different ways to stutter. People stutter in different ways, and so we're not all the same, but you know, everyone's managed, you know, in some way to live with this and to deal with it and to be able to achieve and succeed whether we stutter or not. And again, I think that was one of the messages I got from my therapy was it's not whether you stutter or not. There's a lot of things that you're able to do whether you're a fluent speaker or not.
So let me ask you some questions by sharing some of the bullet points of things I have done to see, to get your thoughts on whether you did it or just what you think about it in general. So I made like 20 bullet points of things that I've done. I'm not going to share them all with you, but I did highlight some that I thought in retrospect are very important. So I had to admit that I stuttered. I always knew that I was hiding something and avoiding something. But when I was about 21, the same age that you mentioned, and we'll have to get to that age thing soon, I had to pick up the phone, call my parents and say, I stutter. I need some help. And I don't ever remember saying that word or anyone saying it to me. So on some level, I just had to admit I have this problem. I stutter and I have to deal with it. Did you have any level of denial with facing your stuttering?
Well, as I said, I think that my story would be more that I thought I was going to stop stuttering, that there was no need to worry about it because it was just going to go away someday. And so for me, it was more a matter of when I met that doctoral student who stuttered and realized that this probably was going to be more than just something that was going to go away. That was when I first began thinking about it, that I need to do something about this. But I think it was when I had those 2 years of unsuccessful college where I didn't really do much because my speech was sort of holding me back. But I always knew that I stuttered. It was never sort of a taboo sort of a thing. I don't think that my parents ever made a big deal about it. But I know that the word stutter was a word that was part of my vocabulary from a fairly early age. So.
Yeah, see, I also had to stop admitting, I had to stop thinking that this was going to go away. I don't know how, but I somehow managed to think, well, when I'm in junior high, I'm not going to stutter. When I'm in high school, I'm not going to stutter.
Exactly.
And it's so interesting that, I mean, I also took time off of college. I was just a wreck. I just didn't want to talk. And I managed to, I went back to school and still was hiding my stuttering. It was only at the very end of my senior year when I was maybe 22 or so that I really decided to face my stuttering. Isn't there something about that age of having to look for a job and then your life's going to move on and you're expected to take care of yourself financially where it's like, whoa, I got to deal with this thing.
Oh yeah. I think that, you know, one of the unfortunate things about growing up is that you've got to start, you know, doing more than you were able to do when you were younger. And yeah, there's often these points in your life where it's like I have to start, you know, doing more for myself or whatever. And I think that, you know, we often see clients in therapy who come to us at these more life juncture time. So it might be the person who's maybe a senior in high school or the senior in college or whatever it might be, people who come to us because they realize that their speech might be more of a hindrance as they go to some new stage in their life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to say this with a smile. One thing I did was that I found a really good speech therapist and right, I got lucky. Yes. I got lucky. I found Phil Schneider. A lot of people don't find Phil Schneiders. And
that's like finding gold. You know, that's really good. Yeah.
So I'm going to share with listeners, and we link to this at Stutter Talk, there are good referral lists out there. Like the Stuttering Foundation has a great referral list. The special interest group on fluency through ASHA has a great list on this, but it's not enough to just have a list of people who specialize in stuttering. It's like dating. I say it all the time. You got to call them. You got to meet with them. You got to decide, is this the person that I'm going to put time in to help me? So when I sat down with Phil Schneider for that first visit, I didn't know how lucky I had it. And when he said to me, it's okay to stutter and stuttering is allowed, you know, I chose to believe him. And it was, I think he told me something I knew, but I needed someone else to tell me that having that thought was okay. That was really important for me to start to internalize that if I stutter and when I stutter, it's okay. That was a big deal.
Well, and again, I had many, many speech therapists in my life before I got to IU, but again, their focus was more on speech fluency. They didn't really understand. I think many SLPs when the focus is just on fluency, when they look at that as being the primary issue, they miss stuttering. They're seeing just a part of the of the problem. And so when people focused on speech fluency, and I didn't stutter all that much, then there wasn't a whole lot to work on with me. But I was doing a whole bunch of stuff that they couldn't see, and they didn't even try to tap into that. So it didn't really help a whole lot.
So I'm going to breeze by a few quick bullet points to get to something that I think is perhaps under-discussed. So stuttering on purpose, avoiding avoidance, those are huge for me. I think I stuttered on purpose every day, numerous times a day for three and a half years. When I say numerous times a day, I had a rule, and I lived in New York City, and I had a rule that anytime I went into a store or anytime I bought food from a coffee vendor or at a deli, I had to stutter on purpose. So I couldn't buy something without stuttering. And so I would go to Dojo's restaurant on West 4th Street, and it was a diner, and I'd sit at the bar and I'd get my eggs in the morning, and I would stutter on purpose every time. I think that bartender heard me stutter on purpose hundreds of times. I mean, it got to the point where it was ridiculous, but that was my rule. I had to stutter to get something I wanted. But just let me breeze through that for a second. One of the things that really helped me was making other changes. So somehow at the very beginning of speech therapy, when I was making this choice that I had to face stuttering and it was really scary and I didn't know how to do it, I was asked, well, is there anything else that you want to change about yourself? And I said, well, I haven't exercised or owned a pair of sneakers in 15 years or 10 years or whatever. And I would like to feel and look better. And the person said to me, well, why don't you do it? Why don't you go buy a pair of sneakers today? And I did. I bought a pair of sneakers. I took a run. And ever since then, I've been exercising 4, 5, 6 days a week for 20 years. And it made me feel so much better. And I remember being in such a bad place with my stuttering and just starting to come out of it, but still being scared to use fake stuttering and still being scared to meet stutterers and exercising like 2 or 3 times in a week. And a girl I knew said to me, you look really healthy. You look really good today. And I remember just thinking, wow, I did something. I bought sneakers and I ran. And 7 days later, a really pretty girl I know just told me how good I look. You know, like it was like, wait a second. I can control my own destiny here. But growing up with a stutter, for whatever reason, I often felt defeated before even trying something. So for me, making parallel changes, not only working on my stuttering, but working on being much more physically fit and healthy, and buying some clothes and feeling good about how I presented myself. Like, those were really important things. And I don't hear this discussed enough. What do you make of it, Bob?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other things that I changed. And again, you're making me go back so many years that it's hard to recall. I think there certainly were other things that were going on. I mean, like, I think that the thing that changed in my life was I decided to become a better student. I decided to devote more energy to my studies. You know, I think that, I spent more time. You know, I became a much more serious student. I went to the library early in the morning, and I would go to the library, or I'd go to the union between classes. But instead of sitting there watching TV or hanging out, I would go find a quiet place and I would read and things like that. So, I'm not sure if I did things like, you know, exercising or those sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, I think that there were other changes that happened. I think that if you're trying to change, you want to change more than just one thing. I think, you know, you just want to be a more fluent speaker, but a more fluent speaker and other things. I became more outgoing. I interacted with more people. I became more social and those sorts of things as well. So.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter Reitzis here with Bob Quisel. We're talking today about We Stutter and what did we do. I also started to face personal relationships a lot better. or when I started dealing directly with my stuttering, I started to repair some relationships that were broken. And that it's hard to, you know, sit down and talk with people who you're not getting along with. And that was something that I have to attribute to my stuttering and speech therapy, that here I am making these speech changes and now I'm exercising and now I'm having civil conversations with people that, and emotional conversations with people that it was hard to do a few months before. And I do attribute all of these good positive changes to being in speech therapy, but it's also very possible that the reason that I was not exercising and had these difficult personal relationships was related to my stuttering, was related to how much in a hole I felt like I was in because of stuttering.
Sure. Yes. Yes.
So, Bob, we've covered an awful lot here, and I think we've done a really good job of not talking about speech tools so far, because no one's going to tune in and say, oh, these guys just worked on some speech tools and everything was better. But here's how I see it, is that we did all these things to face our stuttering, and the learning different ways to look at stuttering and to change how I stutter was important. I don't know if it was 5% or 7%. It certainly wasn't the most important thing I did, but I do remember how great it was to realize that if I slow down my rate of speech, I stuttered less and I felt more in control. And I also remember reading books by people like Charles Van Riper and realizing that if I'm trying to say a vowel and my mouth is shut tight with my lips shut tight on a block, I'm not going to be able to say the vowel in the word. So, you know, like if I'm trying to say pizza and I'm pizza, one of the things I learned was, wow, if I think about talking and if I open my mouth, I will get to the vowel sound in pizza and I can move forward. So thinking about talking definitely helped me. I just don't think speech tools was anywhere near the most important thing I did.
Well, I think that's a really good point. The thing is that certainly changing your thinking about talking and the way you talk greases the skids for using speech tools. In other words, the notion is that if I feel that if I stutter, it's bad. If my speech is not perfect, it's bad. You know, much of what we do in speech therapy, and you even showed there when you were showing how those changes, it doesn't necessarily sound natural. It doesn't feel natural. It's still making changes. And I think that a lot of what we do in therapy is we learn to change the way that we're doing things. It might be changing our thinking. It may be changing our approach to things. It may be changing how we're living our lives. But it's change. And so we certainly change the way that we talk. And I think that's what I said earlier on, was that we were working on on speech as well. We certainly most of my therapy we would do stuff about talking in my speech therapy, but as we were working on my speech, we were working on how do you think about this? How do you think about doing this? Is it hard? Is it easy? You know, why is it easier to do it, you know, in here than it is outside, and those sorts of things. And so it was more of a change in thinking and doing. And I think that's the thing, is that, as I say, when you're in therapy, you're not saying don't worry about speech, don't worry about your speech, and just go ahead and be a happy stutterer, which I think is a, you know, a stupid phrase anyway. But you know, the idea is that, you know, be a stutterer who's taken control of your speech and your life, and who is not letting stuttering call the shots. You are the one who's calling the shots, and therefore it may be that you may have to accept the fact that your speech is less than fluent. However, you can still go ahead and succeed and do what you need to do, even if the speech that comes out of your mouth is not 100% perfect.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And for me, it was so much easier to work on any aspect of the physical speaking once I knew stuttering was okay, once I really internalized it, and when I met other people who stutter. I mean, when I had that first self-help meeting, I didn't want to go. Somebody said, "You're going." They picked me up and they took me, and I was scared. And I really think I was scared of seeing other people who stutter and finding out that they weren't cool, that they were not hip, that I didn't want to spend time with them. And I met that first day people like Jeff Shames. I rang a doorbell, and Jeff Shames and Elizabeth Mendez and Elizabeth Capstein came to the door. And right away, I mean, I just got chills saying that. And it's like, whoa, these really cool,
Cool people, right.
Yeah, dad met Jeff Shames once and still asks about him. Like, my dad really liked Jeff. My family always liked both Elizabeths, you know? Like, and those are people who, like, that first meeting that has never left me. And it's – since then, I've been to dozens – you know, probably over 100 meetings of other stutterers, probably well over 100. And so it's so much easier to work on speaking when you know you're not the only one facing this issue.
For sure. For sure. Yep.
So, Bob, can you give us some closing words here? So, you know, again, we can't give specific people advice. We're just sharing what we did.
Right, exactly. And that's what I always say is, you know, your mileage may vary, you know, so because this is my story, and my story is my story. And I'm often somewhat hesitant to share my story because the things that I did or didn't do, you know, might work for somebody else and might not. I think that the sort of overarching theme of what I've said is simply that if you're stuck, if things are not going well, if your speech is holding you back, the biggest thing is you need to do something. You need to change. And I think that that change can take many forms, but you need to find somebody who can help you. And that typically is hopefully is a good SLP, somebody like Phil Schneider, or again the many student SLPs that I worked with at Indiana University, who can help to guide you and help you to see the things you're doing that you can do differently and the ways that you might be able to change. But you know, again, what I hope that people realize that what we've provided here today is simply some of our personal experiences that may or may not apply to others. And so, you know, this is what helped me. And as I always say to people, if somebody asked me when I was 20 years old, or, you know, what are you going to be, what's your life going to be like? And they said, well, you know, you're going to be a college professor. You're going to teach students. You're going to give lectures to hundreds of people at ASHA conventions. I would have laughed and said, that's the stupidest idea that I've ever heard. There's no way that'll ever possibly happen to me. And here I am now, over 60 years old. And I've done that. That's been my life. That's been my career. And I feel very, very lucky that I happened to, when I was 20 years old, to find the right people at the right time to be able to make the changes that I was able to make and be able to have the life that I've had.
Let me close out with two points very specific to my experience. I passed as fluent past a certain age. So when I was a young child, as old as 7 or 8, I remember having some open stuttering and the neighborhood kids teasing me about it. But at some point near the age of 7 or 8, I decided that I had to hide my stuttering at all costs. And I did a really good job of that because, I mean, I had girlfriends in college who didn't know I stuttered because I hid my stuttering so well. My own parents thought I had outgrown stuttering about the age of 8 because I decided to hide it so well. And for me, a big part of change was dealing with the weirdness that surrounds allowing myself to stutter again, to say what I wanted to say, to stick to my guns and not change words. And it's really weird when you've been passing as fluent for many years to all of a sudden start talking with a stutter. And people, you know, there were a few people who thought it was some type of mental illness. And it's really hard to have to face people you love and care about who think you might have something mentally wrong with you. And it's like, no, I stutter and I'm tired of hiding it. So having to face that was really hard because people think there's something dishonest about you. So that was really tough. And I just had to bite the bullet on that and say, well, I'm a stutterer. And something else, and I really want your feedback on this. I had to really work hard. I mean, I had hundreds, thousands of experiences of going into drugstores and not even wanting anything and just going up to an employee with other people standing around and saying, where do you keep your razors? And I had to practice that and get over my fear and face the fear so much. And, you know, if you go back and you read old studies in our field, about treatment, you realize like, wow, these therapists like Van Riper and Gene Cooper, they had their clients working on their speech 5 hours, 6 hours a day for weeks on end. And I sometimes feel like that hard work aspect of facing your stuttering sometimes gets lost. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, change is not easy. I mean, you know, and I think that however you go about changing, yeah, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some effort, and you got to be willing to change. I think that's why, like we talked about earlier, you know, oftentimes you don't start changing until you're older because you're not willing to put in the effort and the time until you're older, or maybe things become so bad that I just have to do something now in order to make this work. But yeah, it no one says it's going to be easy, but it doesn't mean that it can't be done.
Yeah, and I think here's where I had to say this out loud to get to where I was trying to go with it, is that I work with many great speech therapists, and I'm not sure that many of my colleagues understand just how much work needs to go in to changing stuttering and how you think about stuttering. I just don't think it's us stutterers who want quick fixes. I think that there's a lot of professionals who have no idea that this work takes or can take years and years.
Well, this is a whole nother show, but yeah. But the thing is that because it seems so deceptive, you get somebody in therapy and you say, you know, talk a little slower, just stretch your words out a little bit, use some pausing, use some phrasing. And it's like, look how easy it was for you to be fluent. Just do that all the time.
Yeah, it's like, and you swipe your hands clean. All right, we're done here. Next client.
Good job. Way to go. Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I there's just a couple of things I feel like we have to squeeze in here at the end. I mean, one thing, my speech therapist was a master, and I never felt defeated. I never felt like all the hard work was something I couldn't do. But I also quickly realized that this thing isn't just going to go away, that I'm really going to have to work for it. So for me, finding somebody who motivated me and made me feel like a real winner and always was so supportive, but could be also demanding. For me, it was so much of it was finding somebody who could guide me and help guide me to resources like support groups. So,
right. Right. Yep.
It helps if you have good support.
Yes.
So speaking of good support, you are it, Bob Kuiesel. I want to thank you for joining us today on Stutter Talk.
Thanks, Peter. Appreciate it.